Hello and welcome to the Woodard Report podcast, where we enrich businesses through business advisors. This podcast is your source for information and news you need for your accounting, bookkeeping, or tax practice, and it is proudly sponsored by Rightworks. For more information about Rightworks, please visit woodard.com/podcast. And now your hosts, Joe Woodard and Heather Satterley.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Woodard Report podcast. I am absolutely thrilled today to have Naomi Granger from the founder of the National Association of Cannabis Accounting and Tax Professionals with us, and Bruce Anderson, who founded CannabisCPA.tax, which is a cannabis-focused firm. We're going to be talking about cannabis, if you hadn't figured that out already, which is an incredible emerging market. Fast change, huge growth opportunity. And we're going to spend today talking about why should we care? Should we be considering getting into this market ourselves? And hear from the experts about how you guys have navigated in this market. So welcome. Welcome, Naomi and Bruce.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Where are you guys located? I know here we had a big storm. I think it's just starting to head out. How's the weather where you guys are?
I'm in Las Vegas and we were in the 80s yesterday. So I had my short sleeves on going to the grocery store.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And I'm in Los Angeles. And today I have to wear a jacket because it's supposed to rain this weekend. But yesterday was shorts and t-shirts day.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So we had rain boots today. Rain boots. It was rain boot day. Yesterday was also rain boot day. So I think tomorrow we're supposed to see the sun. So that'll be lovely. So cannabis. Now, you guys have been in the cannabis industry for a while. So Naomi, you've been doing this for about 7 years. And what got you? I'm going to ask this of you too, Bruce. So pay attention. But I mean, what got you into cannabis? What sparked that for you?
Yeah, so I started out with my own accounting firm wanting to figure out my niche. And then I learned about the cannabis niche 7 years ago. And it just, as I started to learn more about it, I saw how complex it was. And I was the type from Big Four, from corporate accounting, where I felt like I easily got bored. Once I learned the industry at the Big Four, I wanted to bounce around to all these different industries, and I just kept getting bored. And then when I started the cannabis industry, I felt like, oh, this is something that I'll never get bored of because it just keeps changing. There's always something new to learn. Every single day, I learn something new in this industry. And so that's the reason why I decided to dive in.
That's awesome. And I would imagine, and we'll dig into this, that I mean, it's constantly evolving, right? Because not every state is legal for cannabis. So, and once they do decide that they're going to make cannabis legal, they have to come up with their own rules and regulations. And so it seems like you'll never get bored, at least not for a long time with the new industry. So yeah. Bruce, how about you? How did you get involved in the cannabis space?
Well, so I was, the traditional small business accounting firm. My son, who works with me now, was working the cannabis space unbeknownst to me, very quietly. And so he put together about 30 of the original 100 dispensaries in greater LA in the 2005, 6, 7 timeframe. So he had a lot of experience with everything to get a business up and running in that space, and then kind of sat on the sidelines for a while. And then in 2018, when recreational became legal in California, he said, well, what do you think? Should we get into it? And I said, well, let's give it a whirl. And as it turns out, even though I'm in great LA, the national firms wouldn't touch it. The regional firms didn't know what to do with it. And the local firms didn't have any guidance. And so fortunately, my son was an industry guy. And so we just teamed up and it's all history from there. I mean, we've been blessed with the referrals we get, and we just keep cranking on this stuff. So it's been quite interesting for us.
So my first question is, and I think that all of our listeners are want to hear the numbers because we're numbers people, right? So how big is this opportunity for the accounting profession? And How is the market served now? Is it underserved? I can only imagine it has to be grossly underserved. Can you speak to that? And I don't know who wants to take that question, but I'd love to hear, how big is this?
Yes, absolutely. So we have some numbers out there, anywhere between $30 billion industry up to $50 billion, and that's the legal industry. And then there's numbers out there that we have the illicit market that could be in the hundreds of billions of dollars, which is just an estimate, but eventually you go from legacy to legal. And so that money can come over into the legal market. So it's a huge industry, one of the biggest industries, one of the biggest employers in the country. We know that it's an essential industry due to the pandemic. And so there's a huge opportunity, and most accountants don't want to touch it because we are conservative by nature. If it's federally illegal, we don't want to have anything to do with it until we get the okay to do something with it. So I speak across the country to several society of CPAs, state societies, and a lot of times I have the accountants in the room raise their hand and say, hey, after my talk, is this something you're interested in doing? And 99% of them say, I want absolutely nothing to do with this. So there's a huge market for accountants.
So this is a huge opportunity for accountants because people are so weary of it. So what types of firms, what is it that draws the accountants to it? So the accountants that are jumping in, and I know several accountants, including you guys, that are working in this industry. Can you kind of tell us, why would CPAs want to dip into it? And then what do you typically see as far as a profile of a firm that's willing to go into the cannabis space?
Well, so it's been interesting where I've gotten calls. We've been very fortunate with our website that it has a drawing card. I mean, when you have the name of Cannabis CPA Tax, it kind of like focuses on, gosh, you guys must be doing tax work and your CPAs in the cannabis space. So we get referrals, calls from all over the place. I had one from a guy in Arkansas, and I said, why would you call me? He goes, there's nobody in the state that we know of, and he had his whole partners on the phone, that have any background about cannabis. And we picked up another guy just recently in the state of Washington, which state of Washington's been around for quite a few years. And he goes, the quality just really is not here. So, it's just, there are new states that it's brand new, and accountants there have to have really been forward thinking to having the experience to want to do the work. And otherwise, it's people coming in from outside the state that are providing services. The federal level, of course, it's a federal tax, so therefore that's all the same. But with regards to the industry itself, I mean, is it like other industries? It really is. I mean, there's accounting, there's tax work, there's bookkeeping work, there's local tax stuff to do. So it's just a matter of adapting to this particular industry, the tools that you're already carrying in your bag.
So what are some of the essential things that if somebody's thinking, hey, I want to learn more about this. I do think this is a big opportunity. I live in Rhode Island and we're like tri-state. We've got Connecticut, we've got Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So there is opportunity here, and dispensaries are definitely highly regulated in our states. You have to apply for the license, and they don't give them out to just anyone. What do I need to know? What are the things that I would account if I decided that I wanted to go into cannabis? What are the things that are different from the other clients that I serve that I need to pay particular attention to?
Yeah, I think to start, you would need to, at minimum, understand the rules and regulations of that state. So pulling the regs, reading those regs and understanding the financial requirements for the operators in that state, whether it be the annual renewal fees, the state excise tax, the state sales tax, cultivation tax, all of those things, getting a good understanding of those, and then also getting an understanding of the software systems in that state. So cannabis has what's called seed-to-sale track and trace systems, and that's where they require to track the plant as it's growing from seed until it's sold to that final user. And the state regulators come to the operators and they do, you know, reconciliations or they do audits on a regular basis to ensure that you are reporting everything into that seed to sale track and trace system. And so as the accountant, that's going to be part of your job to help them with our build SOPs to make sure that they're doing reconciliations between these systems. So understanding those systems, understanding the POS systems, and then just understanding your own standard operating procedures on how are you going to get the numbers you need, whether they're banked, whether they're not banked, how are you going to get the numbers you need into your accounting system so that you can do proper accounting for that client?
That sounds like a lot. It sounds like a lot. What types of training and resources? I know you have the National Association of Cannabis Accounting and Tax Professionals. What types of training resources are available for practitioners that are interested in dipping into this space?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do provide training and we help them just get a base level understanding of this is the industry. These are the differences between working with any other industry and the cannabis industry. And then, you know, going through another thing that they would need to understand are the unique tax codes that relate to the cannabis industry and understanding how to do the proper accounting so that their tax preparer can have the numbers that they need in order to do the proper federal and state taxes.
It isn't just on a state by state, it's a municipality by municipality is where these tax rates will change. So you could have a grow facility where one standard for taxation is sales, and another taxation standard is size of the canopy or size of that facility. And so you just can't say, I'm a cannabis person and go into any region without understanding all the basics and make sure you're comfortable with how that process works. I think part of your question is also, you know, how do you choose what part of the industry? And you have to just decide on what you like, which is non-cannabis. So if you like doing accounting, then look at doing accounting in cannabis. If you like doing technical, read the book, see how the rates have changed, whatever, then that's a different type of profile, which is going to be that state municipal kind of stuff. So you can adapt all of your skill sets to specifically this industry and just transfer them straight across.
Now, Naomi, you had talked about the specific software for the cannabis industry. One of the things that I had heard was that there's an issue with banking because cannabis is not legal on the federal level, right? That some banks don't allow cannabis businesses to operate through them. I believe some of that has changed, but can you kind of dip into that? I know that's a question that I had, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, well, how do you navigate that? Is it all cash?
Yeah, absolutely. So none of the national banks will bank cannabis, specifically the small operators. I don't know what the large MSOs are doing, but none of the national banks like Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, they will not bank cannabis. But some of the smaller, every single client that I've had has been banked, but they're banked with some of the smaller credit unions. And a lot of that comes at a high fees. I've had clients paying upwards of $2,500 a month just for their monthly banking fees, just to have the bank account open. So it comes with high fees, and it also comes with limited banking. So a lot of times the banks won't give them a debit card. You can't just walk in and make a deposit or make a withdrawal. The deposits have to be made via carriers. You have to organize a carrier company to pick up the cash and take it to the Federal Reserve, and then the Federal Reserve will somehow get it to the bank. And it's just a lot more complicated. And also a lot of these credit unions, they're not as sophisticated as, you know, we just take it for granted. If we do something at Wells Fargo or at Chase, it's going to be done correctly. But a lot of times I've made deposits for my clients, will make a $10,000, a $20,000 deposit. And then when it's time to pay the bills, I'll see that they only got $2,000 credit. And we're like, wait, what happened to the other zero? And you have to get on the phone with a bank and you have to call them and they have to make these corrections. And there's just so many ins and outs. It's a lot more hands-on that's necessary. And then credit card processing is completely illegal in the cannabis industry. So you're going to, even if you are banked, most of your customers will be using cash unless you have some type of debit card reader system set up. But they will be using cash. So there's still a lot of cash coming through the door. It's required that these companies have vaults in place and that they have proper cash procedures in place in order to make sure that this cash is properly accounted for. It's not slipping in anybody's pockets. It's not slipping out of the register. And, you know, they have all that stuff under control.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about the legal landscape here. You know, I know a lot of firms, they think, I don't want to touch this. It's not legal federally. How do you reconcile that federal, you know, the illegal federal with the legal state? What does that look like from the accounting standpoint?
Well, you have to remember that if the accountant plays by the rules of their license, that means that they're only going to be dealing with legal operators. And in the state, then, that's going to be, you know, the majority of the activity that any operator or the accountant for that operator experiences is all state-based or locally based. So that's all legal. The only issue that comes into play is when there are situations where things that we would consider to be very commonplace interstate commerce or any kinds of things that we then start to touch on the federal level, that's where it gets a little bit touchy, because now we're back to, oh my God, it's illegal at the federal level. So when you're dealing in a state, you really don't have as many big concerns as you may think. It really kind of starts to flow, and especially with existing states. If you get into a new state, they're still feeling things out. And so some of their rules and laws are really odd situations, and you have to really work through how some of those things are going to be managed. But from a standpoint of, oh my God, this is a terrible situation I'm in, you just play by the rules. You just have to pay closer attention to all the rules.
Yes, in this industry, you have to ensure you have that big CYA file, making sure that you're documenting everything and making sure that you're supporting whichever position that you choose to take. A lot of times, too, a lot of complications that I had in the past was that even if you contact the state regulators, not everybody in those offices really understand the rules that have been put in place. And so sometimes you might not even get the correct answer. You might have to speak to several people, and then based on that, come up with, okay, this is maybe the best route for us to take, and just make sure that you've just documented everything and you're on top of your client. You're making sure that your client isn't doing something that they should not be doing when it comes to, as Bruce mentioned, interstate commerce or selling something other than what they're legally allowed to sell, and following, being in compliant with all the state rules and regulations.
How about insurance? So professional liability insurance. So I'm curious about that as far as, you know, if it is not a, how do the insurance companies approach that? Do they not ask you about it? Do you have to disclose to them that you're serving cannabis clients?
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you do have to disclose. Not everyone will write for you, but I didn't have any problems finding somebody that would write, and they just charge a higher rate for the cannabis dollars that you're making.
So let's talk about that, because I've heard a couple times about you're going to pay a little bit higher. You're going to definitely have to invest a lot of time in researching, you know, tax law, federal regulations are, it's illegal. But the state regulations, and then understanding where you can go into that slippery slope of, now I could possibly be breaking the law, like if somebody's taking something over state lines, right? So let's talk about pricing, because in order for us to serve our clients, there's got to be something in it for us. And that sounds like there is an investment of our time becoming the expert in this industry. And there is an additional level of risk for us at the practitioner level. Can you talk a little bit about the pricing and how have you navigated that?
Well, I think it's like you would do for any other business activity is you're going to, you know, it depends on however you price otherwise. Typically, there's an upcharge with regards to your standard pricing because you just know that there's some inherent issues that are going to come up. If you're going to go on to a flat rate kind of a value pricing deal, then that is a situation where you just have to take a look at what your components are to get into doing that kind of work. And you just have to factor in, as Naomi said, document, document, document. You have to factor in that every engagement is like a mini audit. So if you're doing a simple monthly, a quarterly local tax return, you just don't do it and hope for the best and submit it. What you have to do then is turn around, document your paperwork, put your work paper with your final result and store it. And it has to be, you have to assume that you're going to be audited for literally everything. And so therefore factor that into your pricing and you're going to come up with something that starts to make some sense. This whole thing about banking is because there's vetting that's done at the bank level. Well, we should be doing that at our level as well to make sure that we understand where those soft points are with regards to any client we take on.
So staying in touch with fellow practitioners that are serving the cannabis space, I would think would be absolutely critical for somebody that wants to go into this, you know, into serving this industry. So with the National Association of Cannabis Accounting and Tax Professionals, can you talk a little bit, Naomi, about that organization and what is that experience like? How do you join? And then do you have different state chapters or how do you connect with other practitioners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started the association back in 2021. And it's because when I started in the cannabis industry, I realized that as a CPA and working with clients, there's things that they asked of me that I didn't know. And they expect for you to automatically know. And we as CPAs put that pressure on ourselves that we should know this. And so we put that pressure on ourselves. But I realized that all the connections that you may have had in the past, whether it be insurance providers, bankers, payroll service providers, you name it, typically as the trusted advisor, your client is going to come to you for those financial things that you may or may not even be qualified to provide, but they would like, they use you as a resource to find the proper place to go. Well, I didn't have that. And so I started the association to start bringing in, because this industry is so new, there weren't a lot of players and there still aren't a lot of players in the industry. So I brought in those players so that the accountants who are part of the association can have visibility to who's out there. What are the insurance providers talking about? What are the risks associated with my clients? When do I need to contact this type of attorney? How do I make sure, what do I need to do on my end on the financials to ensure that these insurance claims get paid? Where do I find banking? Who's providing payroll? So all those things. So the association kind of brings all the players in the industry together so that we can better understand everybody's role and who to reach out to. And then the actual membership is divided up into regional committees. And so it's not possible, since it's state legal, federally illegal, and every single state has written their own rules and regulations. Just think about state and local tax. Like, it's impossible to just know the ins and outs of every single state. Our organization, our committees come together and we create knowledge for the whole so that we can be abreast of what's going on across the country and maybe take best practices from one state and see if we can help implement it into our states and, you know, vice versa.
Awesome. And I'm going to put the link in the reader note so they can, you know, find, you know, the organization and learn more about that. Cause I think that is something, I mean, if you're going to go into this space as a newbie, you definitely need to be collaborating with your peers that already have the experience, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about brand. So I'm sure there's a lot of firms out there like, I don't know what that's going to do if I start supporting cannabis, because there's a stigma. I mean, there's certainly a stigma to it. You know, this is still relatively, well, not relatively, it's still really new to us. So how do you navigate that? And what have you seen amongst firms that have started offering services to the cannabis industry?
Well, so for my firm, I've been around for quite some time, and I had an established AndersonCPA.com website where I'm servicing small business and individuals and so forth. And I had an interesting event it's been a few tax seasons ago where I'd gone to some cannabis noon meeting, and I came back and my client was waiting for me. And so she's an older lady. And I said, she said, well, you know, did you have a nice lunch? I said, yeah, I went to this meeting and then talked about, oh my gosh, cannabis. Oh no, not cannabis. And so from that, I realized that there are still those that are not believers or have issues. And so when I put together cannabiscpa.tax as a website, if you go to the website, it references AndersonCPA.com. But if you go to AndersonCPA.com, it does not reference cannabis at all. And I have branded with two LinkedIn addresses, two domains. So I've really separated myself out. But what that's done is it's provided me full, you know, capacity to be able to go heavy duty into cannabis, because I'm not concerned about whatever other things are about other people. And it's interesting where some take a charge with that and some don't. But I'm always going to have a good chunk of my clients that are non-cannabis. And I don't want to fight the battle about telling them how great it is or anything else, because you either know it or you don't know it. So that's why I branded to be specific to the industry. And yet I have my common non-cannabis clients as well.
Yeah, and I'm noticing that the social stigma is fading a little. And so I've been doing it. It's only been 7 years, but we call it dog years in cannabis world because it seems like it's been forever. But I've had people who reached out to me when I first started, and they were like, absolutely not. I'm not pro cannabis legalization. I don't want to have anything to do with it. That's the devil's lettuce and all these things. And then 5 years, 6 years, 7 years later, these same people are reaching back out to me saying, hey, I was totally against this, but now my wife was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago, and this is the only thing that's providing her relief. And so people are starting to realize, especially with the federal government making the announcement that they need to look at the scheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, they're starting to realize that, hey, there's something to this, and it's not as bad as we thought it was, and the veil is being lifted.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that too. I mean, with Rhode Island, we went legal for medical, and then a couple of years later, we went legal for recreational. And what are the differences? Like, so when you're doing accounting, are there any big differences when you're dealing with medical versus dealing with recreational? I would imagine that for the accounting side, it would be the same. But is there anything different there?
Well, so let me give you some brief history. In 2018, when recreation became legal in California, then, of course, there was Metric, which is a system that does the track and trace for the states. And every state has one, and it might not be Metric. It may be another name. But the state came out from the state of California. They came out with these forms, which started with cultivation. And you had to identify, if you're growing weed, is that going to be medical? Or is that going to be recreational use? It's like, you have to give me a break. I mean, there's nothing different, okay? Like, nothing. And so then that took about 2 or 3 years before that consideration went away. They figured out that that was kind of a dumb thing. But there still is the requirement for taxation purposes, because there is the ability to have a different tax rate for medical versus recreational. And there's a difference between, in some states, state-issued cards versus the guy who's, you know, Dr. Schlepp, and he issues cards nationally because he's a medical card, okay? So there's tax implications to this, but the state really doesn't understand. I mean, that's where you have the blind leading the blind, who are legislators who never touched weed. It's like Clinton never inhaling with his marijuana use. But, you know, so taxation-wise is a big deal. Otherwise, there's no difference. You don't know what it is. It all has to be lab tested, and that gives you a lot of comfort.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, definitely. The licensing thing, I know in Rhode Island, when they first passed the medical marijuana, it was new. And so you could get a medical marijuana card from the state of California or somewhere else. And it was honored by the dispensaries in, we called them compassion centers in the state of Rhode Island. And so I think I shared this story with you guys previously, but my son was turning 18, which is the age that you have to be to have a medical marijuana card. And that was what he got himself for his birthday. His 18th birthday is, you know, I think like a year and a half later, they shut it down. Right. But my husband and I were laughing. And at first, you know, like, what is he doing? He's getting it. And then we kind of sat back and said, that was actually a really responsible thing for him to do. And it protected us. Right. So I was like, pretty adult of him to say that was a priority for him. So, you know, we're in a different world now, right? So it's going to be interesting. And with that, what is the future outlook? I mean, to me, from the outside, and I have not helped cannabis clients, it looks super bright. I think that more states are going to legalize it. I think the federal government will eventually legalize it. I think it will continue to be highly regulated. But I'm not the expert. Well, you guys are the expert. What do you guys think?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting where every year that the feds do not legalize things, then what happens is the states will be more entrenched into they've now legalized and so on and so forth. So the feds are causing themselves more problems while they are waiting to be legalizing things from the federal level, because they have more states that they have to, blend together. With regards to the way in which the industry looks, I mean, there are people who say to me, oh, this is a short-term deal. It's going to be 2 years and they're going to legalize. Well, I had a friend of mine the other day say it's another 5 years out. Well, you keep kicking the can, it's another five, and it's another five. And, well, that, you know, gets you through a good portion of your career if that keeps happening. And gosh, what happens if it becomes legal? Well, guess what? It's like any other business. I mean, I used to think that the gas station business was terrible because of all the taxes, tire tax and gasoline tax and you name it, tax and whatever. It's the same thing with cannabis. It's still going to be an industry that's out there. There's still going to be the need for experts that understand this stuff. And the one thing we don't know the answer to is how heavily are they going to start to do IRS income tax audits. That hasn't even started yet. And so right. If somebody likes doing audits, boy, there's an area to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the industry is just going to continue to grow. As I mentioned earlier, it's about a $30 billion industry, and it's estimated to be $50 billion in 2025. Also, they are looking at the rescheduling of the drug. And if they do reschedule it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, that means the 280E taxes go away, which means there's more money in our clients' pockets to pay fees as well as to grow and to fund operations. And so it's just going to continue to grow. Whether it's legal or not, it's here and it's been here. I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know, you know, in the state of Rhode Island, we have our University of Rhode Island is a big agriculture school. And we, for several years now, it's been around now for several years, we have a cannabis program. And we actually have a cannabis business dual program, which is really interesting. So I do see it as a huge opportunity for those that are dipping their toe in. And you're right. I mean, this is an emerging industry. When it does become legal, if it becomes legal federally, those that have already dipped their toes and become the experts are going to be the ones that are going to really reap the benefits from this. So because they're going to be whoever, you know, who everybody's going to be looking to. So Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited. You guys are doing a panel session with other cannabis experts on Monday, at the Monday afternoon session at Scaling New Heights this coming June. I'm really excited. It's going to be an incredible panel. It's the first time we've had cannabis curriculum at Scaling New Heights, and we're really excited to bring it this year. So thank you for joining us for that. And I'm really looking forward to that.
This is great.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks. And to our listeners, you can look in the reader notes and you can find Naomi and Bruce if you have any questions. And I encourage you to attend their session this coming June. And thank you so much. It's been fantastic.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, please visit woodard.com/podcast.